This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. It's better
over here. Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Some good NFL games Sunday. I did look up the weather at Lambeau Sunday for the big one at 425. Rain and chilly. Very fallish at Lambeau. Temperatures upper 40s, low 50s with rain all day Sunday. The Lions outdoors, bad weather. How did they do last year? Bad weather outdoors. Did they have any bad weather games outdoors? I'm looking late in the season. They did play at Chicago in December and lost 28-13. I think it was a pretty cold day at Soldier Field. That would have been the only cold game because they were at Minnesota and at Dallas. So both of those games indoors late in the year. We don't have to start there, Denton. Start where you want to start.
Let's start with the Dallas Cowboys going on the road to Atlanta. It's a 1 o'clock kick. You got the Cowboys at 3-4. You got the Atlanta Falcons at 5-3. Kirk Cousins playing well. Dallas is not. Atlanta's 3.5-point favorites at home.
Yeah, I'm actually surprised that I didn't have the Cowboys as a pick this week because I thought there would be overwhelming action on Atlanta -3. But there wasn't. It was kind of split. People still believe in Dallas. Look, I don't know how the Cowboys get it back together. They don't have a run game. They are a one-dimensional football team. And that one dimension really only includes one legitimate wide receiver. So that's the problem offensively. Not to mention that it really looks like a stale offense from the jump. And then defensively, are they going to be healthy Sunday? Is Micah Parsons playing?
I have not seen anything that suggests that he's playing.
I think there's a chance that he's playing on Sunday.
Might be
that would be a big difference for them because Atlanta has had some struggles, at times with, like T.J. Watt wrecked the game in the opener. That's a long time ago. Look. If you can't move the ball against the Falcons on Sunday, if you're the Cowboys, you got to throw the towel in. The Falcons will give up a lot of yards. They'll give up a lot of third down conversions. And you just have to stop them. That's the problem. I think right now, defensively, DVOA-wise, hold on, I had it before. The Falcons are 23rd. In the league. They're sixth offensively, 23rd defensively. Dallas should be able to, unlike against the 49ers or in some of their recent games, if they can't move the football against the Falcons, they're in big trouble. I mean, they can hang it up. So they played, good defensive teams here in recent weeks. They get a break. They should be able to move the football. They should be able to score some points. I guess Atlanta wins in a really tight game. Most of their games have been really tight.
I like Atlanta in this one. I've watched Dallas enough to know that I'm not betting on Dallas at this point in the season.
Yeah, I'm not going to bet the game.
No, I'm not betting the game either. Up to Buffalo, you got the Bills. They're playing host to the Dolphins. The Bills playing really well. Josh Allen's only thrown one interception this entire season. Still needs turnover as well. They're 6-1 favorites over the Dolphins, who now have Tua Tagovailoa back.
Yeah, his second game back. You know, let's face it. They could not score at all without him, right? And then last week, even though they lost the game, they put up points. And, you know, I don't know how many people paid attention to Cardinals-Dolphins last week, but there was a horrible safety. Miami had the ball late third quarter, up 10, and there was a snap that was, you know, over to his head, ended up being a safety, and that sparked Arizona's comeback. They came back, and, I mean, the ball wasn't at the goal line. The ball was, like, at the 12-yard line, and that sparked a comeback. But Miami was offensively viable. You know, Tua threw for 234 and a touchdown. They ran the football for 150 yards. And they had not been viable offensively prior to Tua's return. So I actually give Miami a shot Sunday. You know, I gave him out as a +6 play. This is a big game for the Dolphins. You know, the Dolphins have to get some wins. They've, you know, without Tua, they fell to 2-4, and now they're 2-5 after the 1-point loss. And they've got opportunities coming up. This would be a big one for them. This was the game, obviously, in week 2 in which Tua got hurt, the opponent. I like Miami to hang in there and have a chance to win this game.
I do not like Miami. I like Buffalo. I think Josh Allen's playing too well. How about a must-win game for Cincinnati? They're home against the Raiders. They're 3-5. Dropping to 3-6 puts them in a tough spot. Joe Burrow said this week, we can win 7 of the next 9. Well, you got to win 7 of the next 9. They're 7-point favorites, Cincinnati is.
Yeah, that was a bad loss last week. You know, and it was a bit misleading. I know you watched it. I was paying attention to it as well. You know, there was a fourth down stop in their own territory. Cincinnati got stopped fourth down in their own territory in a game that was like 10-10, or may have been even 10-3. And the Eagles, you know, took it from there and dominated. Cincinnati, I've said this to you now for 2 weeks running. Somebody's going to make the AFC playoffs, and probably two teams are going to make the playoffs at like 9-8, and maybe even worse than that. When you look at what the AFC has, Cincinnati certainly could be one of those teams, but you have to now win all of the games that are coin toss games or that you're favored in. The Raiders played well last week against the Chiefs. I don't think they're going to play as well this Sunday. You know, West Coast, East Coast, early start. I like the Bengals to get to 4-5. And this is pretty much a must-have for them because they play the Ravens Thursday night after that. Figure they lose that game. You know, they got to get to 8 somehow. They've got 3. They've got to go 5-4 over their last 9. I think they're capable of doing that. To get to 9 wins, but this one's a given. I think these games always worry me, you know, because we've seen them all year long. These big underdogs not only cover but win outright. And Cincinnati's been vulnerable against almost everybody, but I'll go with Cincinnati.
Yeah, I'm taking Cincinnati in this one too. It's got to have it win. You can't lose this one. All right, how about the Browns and the Chargers? The Chargers on the road against Famous Jameis, a small 1.5-point favorite. If the Browns win this one, they'll be 3-6, and they'll have 2 in a row with Jameis.
Yeah, this is a big spot for the Browns. I know it's crazy to even consider that, but if they were to beat the Chargers at home on Sunday to have 2 in a row, now they're 3-6, and now they're thinking we could be a 9-win wild card team. They have like the Saints. They've got still 2 with the Steelers. They've got, you know, I think the Broncos or somebody bad coming up as well. Broncos are not bad, by the way. This is a tough one. The Chargers have not been super impressive, but they have found ways to win games. They actually, in their loss to the Cardinals on the road, there were some officials, you know, calls down the stretch that did not go their way. I don't know what to make of the Chargers at this point. Do you?
No clue. Like, they are such a good running team. Herbert has impressive numbers, but no receivers. Defensively, they're kind of whatever. They're in such a weird spot. They are the definition of NFL purgatory right now as a team.
It's really hard to. Here's the one thing: they're playing Jim Harbaugh football. They're protecting the football, right? Aren't they way up there or way down there on giveaways in terms of? I'm going to look that up real quick.
I mean, Herbert's only thrown one pick on the season.
One pick the whole season.
Yeah,
right. And I don't think they have many fumbles either in giveaways right now. The Chargers are. They're tied for second least in the league. You know who leads the league in the fewest giveaways?
Washington.
Along with Buffalo. And the Chargers have only committed 4 turnovers. The Chargers are +6 in the turnover margin category. I don't have a feel for this game at all. I mean, it's a big game for both teams. It shouldn't be a big game for Cleveland, but I think there's new life there. With Jameis, if they were able to pull off 2 in a row over the Ravens and the Chargers, there's a belief they are still good on defense. Really good.
All right, I'm going to jump around a little bit in this 1 o'clock slate because some of these games are doo-doo. But the big one on the 1 o'clock is the Broncos going on the road. They're 5-3, taking on the Baltimore Ravens. They're 5-3. They're coming off of a really bad loss this past weekend to those Cleveland Browns that we just talked about. Right now, Baltimore, 8.5-point favorites. This feels like a tough spot to be the Denver Broncos right now after one of the best teams in the NFL lost the way they did last week.
The Ravens are 24-3, including the playoffs, by the way, at home against rookie starting quarterbacks in franchise history, which is the best home win percentage by any team since 1950 over rookie quarterbacks. Bo Nix isn't playing like a rookie quarterback right now. He's playing well. They are 5-3 if you're not paying attention. By the way, his 5 victories are the most by a rookie quarterback in Broncos history. John Elway did not win 5 games as a rookie. Denver's excellent defensively. Look, I think one of the things you look at with Denver is they do have 5 wins, but their 5 wins include wins over the Panthers, Saints, Raiders, the Jets in the rain where Zuerlein missed a field goal at the end, and that one crazy outlier where they went to Tampa and beat down the Bucs 26-7. But their losses are all competitive losses. This is interesting. I think the line was kind of high for this one. I like the Ravens to win and maybe win big. But if the Broncos hang in there and they play the Ravens well and tough, you know, they're going to be considered to be a legitimate wild card, you know, possibility in the AFC.
I think the Broncos get crushed. I don't love them really at all. I think Bo Nix is playing fine. I'm fine with Sean Payton. I think he's a good coach. I don't love him. I don't think this one's close. I think Baltimore blows their doors off.
Yeah, this feels to me like 34-17, something like that, Ravens. But I still think the Broncos defensively are really good. And they've got, you know, Javonte Williams has always been one of my favorite backs when he's been healthy. And Sutton is also healthy, really good. We'll see. Broncos, you know, they're going to hang in there for a while, more likely than not in the wild card race in the AFC. What's next?
All right, we're going to the later window. You got the 405 kicks. We are going to be big Jaguars fans starting at 405. They're on the road against Philadelphia. Right now, Philly's a 7.5-point favorite. We talked about this week at length that Philadelphia is now the betting favorite across most sports books to win the NFC East. It would really do the Commanders a solid if they beat the Giants this weekend and then if Jacksonville can go on the road and steal a win from Philadelphia. Unlikely, but we're big fans of Jacksonville this weekend.
Look, Philadelphia's gotten on a roll in part because Jalen Hurts is playing better and he's protecting the football. He turned the ball over 7 times in the first 4 games of the year. That was the second most at the time in the league. 0 turnovers from Jalen Hurts in their last 3 games. That's a big part of what they need to continue to do. The Jags defensively are a mess. They can't stop anybody. I think they are on pace to give up the most yards and the most points per game in franchise history. They are still capable offensively, but I think Brian Thomas Jr. may be out for this week. So who are they going to throw the ball to? Isn't Kirk hurt as well? So if they go into Philadelphia without, you know, two of their best receivers and playmakers, this doesn't seem like much of a shot. I mean, I can tell you a lot of action on Philly. I almost thought, you know, Jacksonville was right. I'm just staying off this thing because I don't know. Philly wins this game. I don't know if they cover, but they win this game. And the only way they lose it is if they start, you know, giving the ball away again.
Right now, Brian Thomas Jr. questionable, as is Travis Etienne and Gabe Davis.
And Kirk's out, right?
Didn't
Kirk get hurt seriously?
I don't think so, because his name was involved in some trade rumors this week.
Yeah, I know. Really? But hold on. I thought he got injured last week. Yeah, he's out for the season.
He's out for the season. All right.
Yeah, he got hurt last week.
Not on the injury report then, where I'm looking at it. All right.
Broken collarbone.
Okay, so he's not getting traded. You got the Bears going on the road against the Cardinals. We'll get to that big one, Lions Packers, in a second. Bears going on the road against the Cardinals. Arizona, small favorite, 1.5 at the moment.
Yeah. I don't have a good feel for the Cardinals right now. I think you have a better feel for the Cardinals right now. They're home against the Bears. They went on the road and won a game that they were an underdog in. They have back-to-back wins over the Chargers and the Dolphins with Tua. They've won. Remember, they beat the 49ers. This Washington win at Arizona is becoming more and more impressive by each passing week. I still don't understand. Someone will have to explain to me how Kyler Murray has run the ball effectively in every single game this year except for one, and that is the Washington game. I don't understand that. I didn't think it was all Washington's defense containing him. It just looked like they didn't run any of the option stuff, any of the design stuff, and he just decided to he wanted to be a pocket passer that day, which he's not. Cardinals are... I mean, what do you think of the Cardinals? You kind of liked them before the season started.
I think they're a lot like Vanderbilt in college football, where they're going to lose games that they really shouldn't lose, but they're going to fight in games where they really shouldn't have a chance to fight in. Like, they are on a roller coaster. There's next to no consistency, but sometimes you're going to sit down and watch them and be like, you know what? This team has something, and that's what the Cardinals are. They have a little bit of something. I don't know that I trust them to beat the Bears, but if this was a better team, they'd push them. It's like they are the weirdest team right now in the NFL. It's them and the Chargers. They're both super weird for very different reasons, because the Cardinals have a lot of things on offense that you look at and say, this team should be good, but their Achilles heel is that their quarterback is 2'3", and he can't see over the offensive line.
He is tiny, that's for sure. What else?
All right, the big one, Lions-Packers. The Packers, 2.5-point dogs. At home, there's still not a lot of clarity on whether or not you're going to see Jordan Love. He hasn't practiced all this week for the Green Bay Packers, but he has said that does not mean he will not play. Also on their injury report is Josh Jacobs and Jaire Alexander, who have been really good for them.
I mean, if they coach Malik Willis, if Malik Willis plays, if they coach him into another solid game and they pull off a win over the Lions at home, I mean, Matt LaFleur, is he underrated at this point? I mean, I think most people realize how good he is. Games outdoors for Detroit. I did look this up. The game they lost to Chicago in December last year, it was 33 degrees at kickoff, so chilly enough. You tell me Jordan Love's healthy and he's going to play, even though he hasn't been as good this year as he was last year. I still think the Packers can get it done. I think the Packers are explosive, more explosive offensively than most people know. What about Josh Jacobs? Is he playing or not? That's a big deal.
Yeah, he's also questionable, so we don't know.
I mean, this game, it's hard to pick it right now without knowing how healthy Green Bay will be. Here's one thing just to consider, though. If Detroit goes in there and destroys Green Bay, you know, like they did, you know, the Titans, like they did the Cowboys. And they've got two results in the last 3 weeks. NFL games, 47-9 and 52-14. By the way, the 52-14, one of the oddest things I've ever seen. They scored 52 points last week, and Jared Goff threw for 85 yards. Three touchdowns, but 85 yards. His QBR in the game, even though he was 12 of 15, was 16.8. You know why? He took four sacks against that Tennessee defense. Anyway, if Detroit goes into Lambeau and let's just say wins by 14 or more, won't we automatically then say without much hesitation, this feels like a dominant team in the NFC? And the Super Bowl, you know, the trip to New Orleans for the Super Bowl is going through Ford Field. I think we will. This is a game in which if you are going to be that team, and we've seen this, you know, where there are dominant teams start to finish, they go on the road and they pummel their division rivals in a big game. Be interesting to see what happens. I like Detroit. I actually believe in the Lions right now.
Yeah, I think I do too, especially with no Jordan Love. All right, final one here because we're short on time. Let's do the Sunday night one. You got the Colts, you got the Vikings. Minnesota is a 5.5-point favorite, despite the fact they've lost their last two. We've talked about this week with Indianapolis. They bench Anthony Richardson. It's Joe Flacco for the foreseeable future. That's what Shane Steichen said this week. The Colts are 4-4 right now. If they win this game based off of what happened last night with Houston and not knowing what the offensive skill positions are going to look like for Houston for the next couple weeks until Nico Collins gets back, it feels like that division is within grasp of the Colts if they win on Sunday night. Who do you like?
I think the Colts have a chance to go in and beat Minnesota Sunday night. The Vikings have lost two in a row. It's not that the wheels are coming off at all. I mean, the Vikings lost to Detroit, you know, in a 2-point loss, and they lost to the Rams, you know, on that Thursday night game a week ago last night. But what you've seen in watching them is you've seen a defense start to get run on, which was not happening during their 5-0 start. And the other thing you see is you see Sam Darnold not seeing it as clearly, especially after the first kind of scripted series or two. And he's getting pressured, and they lost their left tackle in Christian Darrisaw. They did add a veteran tackle this week, but I think Indy has a shot. I think Indy's actually a good team as a roster. The fact that with Anthony Richardson, they still had a chance to beat Houston last week is telling. I give Indy a really good shot. I think they cover Sunday night, and it's a close game. It's a field goal either way.
I think Indianapolis wins. I think the Flacco magic is a real thing. I think Indianapolis goes on the road Sunday Night Football. I think they win.
All right. Let's get a college college preview with Denton next.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free. All on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Payoff up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port and trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, 3-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Pick up your book bags, grab your notebooks. It's time to go on campus with Denton.
Hey, give me my theme music.
All right, Denton, big one tomorrow at noon on Fox, Ohio State, Penn State. Who do you got?
Yeah, this is the biggest one of the weekend, certainly. This one is fascinating to me. Right now, Ohio State, Kevin, is a 3-point favorite on the road against Penn State. This one's being played at noon for television purposes. If not, it would have been a whiteout game at night, which I think we got robbed of a little bit, but it's fine. Ohio State did not look good last week against Nebraska. I think they should have lost that game if Dylan Raiola was just a little more accurate on certain throws, but I do think there's going to be a significant bounce back offensively for Ohio State against Penn State. I think Ryan Day is under the more pressure of the two coaches right now. This would be Ohio State's second loss if they do fall to Penn State. And then at that point, they're not in the driver's seat, either A, for the Big Ten championship, and then B, for the college football playoff. Now, a two-loss Ohio State team still gets in more likely than not, but you then at least...
You think so?
I would think so. With 12, yeah, a two-loss Ohio State team gets in.
I mean, especially if it ends up being two losses to two undefeated teams.
Right, because you would also, at that point, you would have beaten Indiana. But because Indiana is good this season, like this game is more pressure. Because if you are now a two-loss team going into Indiana, whether you believe in the Hoosiers or not, like there's just an added amount of pressure. And then you get Michigan in there as well at some point. You don't get to play in a championship game. Like there's a lot to this if you're Ohio State. So Ryan Day has to come in. He has to go on the road. He has to beat Penn State. I do think Ohio State wins this one. I don't know what the status is of Drew Aller at quarterback for Penn State. I thought the backup, Prebula, came in and looked really good. But it's a different beast when it's Ohio State. You want Drew Aller.
What happens if Penn State, Oregon, and Indiana all go undefeated? Who's in the Big Ten title game?
I believe it would. I don't know what that tiebreaker would look like. It would probably look something in the direction of strength of conference schedule, which you have to get into the nitty gritty of who ends up.
It's probably a common games thing.
It might be common games, which Ohio State would be a common game for everybody, as would Michigan.
I thought you said something that was interesting, that this is a higher pressure game for Ryan Day than it is for James Franklin.
Definitely.
I think I agree with you on that, but I would not have agreed with you had they beaten Oregon.
Correct.
Because I think Ryan Day needs to get to the playoff and have a chance to win a national championship, and a loss to Penn State obviously would be, you know, hurtful. James Franklin never wins these games, Denton. Penn
Correct.
State fans have had it with James Franklin and losing these games. This is a big spot for him, too. I understand that they can lose and still end up being in a playoff, you know, by running the table against, you know, I think they play Maryland and, you know, they do have a game at Minnesota. And they could be a one-loss team. They could potentially even play in a Big Ten title game, although that they probably get eliminated from that with a loss to Ohio State unless, because then the Indiana-Ohio State winner ends up being the team that plays Oregon. But Franklin needs to win one of these games.
He does, but the difference in why I say there's more pressure on Ryan Day is because Penn State right now is unbeaten. So, yes, the fan base is livid, I'm sure, that he never beats Ohio State. But if you're a one-loss team, still get to the college football playoff, yeah, you'll be frustrated. But, hey, we're in the college football playoff, and if we win a college football playoff game, you can kind of look back at that Ohio State thing and say, yeah, it stinks that we lost to them, but if we win in the playoff, you know, what's it really to you? We're advancing. We're making progress here to where if Ryan Day loses, he will have now lost two games in the early portion of November. I mean, when was the last time an Ohio State team lost two games by early November?
Yeah.
And then you have Indiana and Michigan. Like, that schedule for Ohio State is significantly more difficult. On top of that, while Ryan Day didn't ask for this, you had Urban Meyer, you had Jim Tressel this offseason saying this is the most talented team that Ohio State's ever had. So there's pressure from guys that are supposed to have your back. They add pressure, and then there'd be pressure from everybody else on the outside of your program because you would have two losses. So I think Ryan Day is under the most amount of pressure between the two, but certainly James Franklin needs to win one of these games.
You've got an issue with Penn State, a quarterback, too. Drew Aller, you know, is I think, being called a game-time decision. I think, you know, Bo Prabula played well last week, and I thought that was a hostile environment, and I thought he played and looked really, really good. I had Wisconsin that night, so it hurt a little bit, but Ohio State did not run the football very well against Nebraska. They're banged up along the offensive line. This is going to be great theater. You know, I actually don't mind the noon kick for this. I think it provides something else. The intensity of a game that early in the day. And Fox will tell you that's their biggest window anyway. I don't have a pick in this game. I think I'd lean Ohio State because I just trust Ryan Day. I trust Will Howard. I trust their ability to potentially, you know, just be a little bit more athletic and a little bit more explosive. But and I don't trust Franklin. So I'll pick Ohio State.
Yeah, Ohio State is my pick in this one as well. Maybe not to cover the number, but I do think Ohio State wins.
All right, what else?
All right, we got time for one more game here because we got to get to our guest coming up here. This is going to shock you the direction I'm going to go here, but Pitt-SMU might be the game outside of Ohio State and Penn State that I'm looking forward to the most. SMU 7-1, they're ranked 20th. Pitt is unbeaten, and they rank 18 right now. They're 7-0. I've been so focused on the possibility of Clemson and Miami in that collision course in the ACC championship that I have completely disregarded these two teams. Both are still very much alive. If Pitt gets this win and then they play Clemson coming up here shortly, they could steal a spot in the ACC championship game and then potentially the college football playoff as well. So this is a big one, 8 p.m. ACC Network in Dallas.
Yeah, this is nothing, you know, speaks to ACC big game football than SMU and Pitt, and we finally get that matchup. I've already given out SMU. They're a big favorite. They've done such a good job. Rhett Lashley's done a phenomenal job after replacing Sonny Dykes. SMU's the real deal offensively. Holstein got, I think, banged up, so he doesn't come into this one 100%. Love Narduzzi as well. This will be a fun game, but I think SMU wins big in Dallas, and Pitt is no longer an undefeated team.
All right, real quickly before we go here.
Did you want to pick it?
I like Pitt in this one.
Okay.
Dan Quinn said Cornelius Lucas is out on Sunday, but Frankie Louvu and Cleland Farrell, good to go.
All right, that's good news. That Brandon Coleman hopefully will be good to go and start at left tackle. He's played well. All right, we'll go up to New York, get an update on the Giants next. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the team980.com. All right, meeting number two for Washington and New York on Sunday in the Meadowlands, MetLife. 1 o'clock, Washington, a 4-point favorite. Chris Bisignano is with us. Chris has been on with us before. He covers the Giants for the Giant Insider podcast and newspaper at Giant Insider on X on Twitter. And he joins us courtesy of our BetQL guest hotline. Bet smarter, beat the books. Download the BetQL app today or visit BetQL.com. Chris, thanks again for spending time with us. I want to start with just Daniel Jones. Was there a chance after Monday night that they would have benched him or not?
No chance. He was playing today. Not even remotely questionable he was going to play.
And so what kind of confidence, and why is the confidence still there for with Dable and Daniel Jones?
Because first of all, because Drew Locke and Tommy DeVito were behind him.
Right.
And two, look, Daniel's done some good things and a lot of bad things. He hasn't been a disaster. He had a 4-game run where he played pretty good football and hasn't resulted in wins. So I get that. But we're not at that point now where Dable looks at him and says, okay, he can't move this team at all, and he gives us no chance of winning. So the bottom line is that Daniel right now gives him the best chance of winning. That's why Dable will stick with him.
What was the reaction to Dable, you know, in that press conference, describing in great detail the T.J. Watt sack strip fumble and basically laying it at the feet of Daniel Jones? You rarely hear coaches give you that kind of detail, but he did. And Daniel Jones, by the way, described it the same way in the press conference. He forgot to motion that tight end over to help the right tackle with T.J. Watt. But I'm just curious as to what the reaction was to Dable, you know, putting it out there that sack strip fumble was on Daniel Jones.
Yeah, look, we were surprised by it in the post game. We were definitely, that's not Dable's style. He usually just moves on, doesn't really want to get into it. So that was different, no question about it. From what I understand, though, Dable and Jones did talk before he came out, Dable, and Daniel knew that was going to be said. And like you said, Daniel said it in his presser too. But yeah, we were all kind of surprised by that. It kind of shows me a little bit that Dable was pissed. Okay, like it was like enough now. We can't have that with a 6-year quarterback. You have to know to shift the old Johnson over to tight end. And this is getting a little stupid now. So Dable, was he sending a message? No, but I think he was at the same time as like, oh, come on, man. We can't have this anymore. So I'm going to let everybody know exactly what happened in that play. It was very interesting because that's not Dable's style.
Yeah, I mean, like, when I saw that, and I saw, you know, the Manning cast, and Eli right before the snap said, you got to motion the tight end over, you can't leave TJ Watt one-on-one, and then he threw his arms up in the air like, what are you doing? And I kind of read it from afar that Dable's feeling the heat a little bit, you know, that he didn't want people to know that this one, you know, this turnover was on him.
I think that's a valid point, and I also believe that Dable wanted tell everybody to, like, I'll show everybody, like, I'm kind of getting sick and tired of these mental mistakes. You know, I was just talking with quarterback coach Shane Taney. They were meeting with the media teenage assistants. Even Shea was kind of, like, frustrated, like, yeah, that really can't happen, you know. So there's a lot of frustration. Look, guys, look, as you know, Kevin, it's when you're 2-6, there's a ton of frustration in the building.
Right.
I think that was one of those moments where, like, Dable was very frustrated because that can't happen. What do you think? Of course, you know what happens knowing the Giants the way they've been lately, the last 6, 7, 8 years. Of course, TJ gets the strip sack and they get the ball right back. So just a lot of frustration. You can mount it up to a little bit like a frustration because it's not good feelings around the building here with this 2-6 season.
Right. You know, but you said something and alluded to something, and I've actually talked about your team for a while. Like, I thought this was a very good defensive team even before the season started. Dexter Lawrence right now is having a defensive MVP type of season. But in the last two games in particular, they've gotten run on defensively. So why the step back defensively over the last 2 weeks?
Well, it's actually been a little bit longer than that as far as against the run. They're averaging, I think they give up over 440 a game. They just haven't been good against the run. They were a little bit better early in the season, but it's gotten worse each week. Look, guys are just not holding their gaps. But look, it's the same old story, too, right? And it'll never change in this league. You got to beat your guy up front, one-on-one. You got to get off the, I hate to say damn on your show. You got to get off the blocks, right? And they're just not doing it. And then on top of that, when a back gets into that second level, you got to tackle, man. You got to tackle before the sticks. And the Giants have had a lot of problems with that. And,
yeah.
You know, that's why you give up 140-plus a game, and now you got Brian Robinson, who destroyed him early in the year, coming in this week. It's a big problem. They're just not getting it done. Besides Dex, Dex is getting it done, as we all know. But they've had a lot of issues, and that includes the linebackers, guys up front, and tackling. Been a big, big problem the last 4 or 5 games.
All right, what hasn't been a problem the last couple of games and is just – or last several games, because we didn't really see him in week two. He had one carry, is the emergence of Tyrone Tracy. And Singletary's back healthy, and they've been able to run the football. And I would imagine that's kind of how you see the Giants winning this game, is possessing the football, keeping it out of, you know, Daniel's hands and running the football. A, is Tracy going to go Sunday? And B, you know, tell us a little bit about why they've been successful, you know, running the football here recently.
Yeah, yeah. The first part of your question is Tyrone's practicing today. They expect him to be cleared out of the protocol this afternoon. So it looks like he's going to play, barring any, you know, some kind of setback. But we just met with Dave, but it looks like he's playing. And the second answer is that, hey, look, Tyrone Tracy. This kid is only – he's got 1 year playing running back in college, and here he is now. His vision has been a huge surprise. And I talked about his vision back in camp. The kid's just a good running back, man. I mean, he's physical. He'll bring it to you when you go to tackle him, and you see him. When he's at the line, when he gets the ball, he'll cut left, he'll cut right. He finds that open hole. He's just a good back, man, and he's proven it. He's got 200-yard games this season, coming off a real good game, as you know, last week against a very good run defense game in, team in Pittsburgh.
Right.
So he's been a great surprise. His physicality, his vision, and a big reason why, you know, he's going to get the majority of the snaps.
All right, so what's the reaction up there to Washington's 6-2 start and Jaden Daniels in particular?
Well, the reaction is, honestly, it's no big surprise, you know, because so many people, fans, media, and Brian Dable and Joe Shane, they love Jaden Daniels. We all love Jaden Daniels. Dable, Shane love Jaden Daniels, but we knew we weren't going to be able to get him in the draft. So we're not, nobody's really surprised what Jaden's doing. Now, that being said, Did I have Washington 6-2 after 8 games? No, I didn't. But, look, Jaden Daniels is a story. Dan Quinn's defense, as you know, is getting better every week. And this is a good football team, man. This is a good – and, I, of course, you always need a few breaks to go here and there. We all saw what happened last week. So this is a good football team. Everybody kind of expected Washington with Jaden to be much better this year. As far as 6-2, like I said, maybe not 6-2-wise, but not a real big surprise because you just saw it with your guy, Jaden Daniels, man. You just saw it in LSU. You saw it in training camp. You saw it at the beginning of the year. We saw it in game one where Jaden killed us with his legs. He's getting better every week with the arm. He's accuracy, tough. What more can I say, buddy? It's been pretty impressive.
All right, so what kind of chance do you give the Giants Sunday?
I give them a good chance. I'll give you a couple reasons why. They always play well against Washington. Actually, usually beat Washington, but this year we know what happened. If they score a few touchdowns, that's been a problem. They only have 1 in 16 quarters at home, which is mind-boggling.
That's crazy.
It's crazy. They haven't got any turnover. They're -3. They got 1 interception. I think if they can get a turnover in Jaden or somebody and keep them out, because their red zone, you guys' red zone offense hasn't been the best, and they get a couple of red zone scores, the Giants, they have a chance to get out of here with a win. I think it'll be a tough battle. I think it's going to be close, and there's a good chance the Giants can get out of here with a win. But we said that a few times this season, so we'll see.
Chris, thanks again. Appreciate it. Enjoy it on Sunday.
Enjoy the game. Talk soon.
Yep. Chris Bisignano from the Giant Insider podcast and newspaper at Giant Insider. Time for our predictions on the game. Denton, you want to go first?
I'm optimistic this week, which, shocker. I mean, the team has been giving us a lot of reasons to be optimistic. But I'm of the belief, you know, I think, understandably, there's been a lot of conversation about the first time these two teams matched up. And it was, well, if the Giants had a field goal kicker of the game, they probably would have won. I think you can make that same argument, too, if Washington executes in the red zone on two plays, that they win this thing by double digits. But at the time, it felt like because we'd never seen a team go 7 possessions and score on every single one of them, that was not something that was feasible. I think it was. So I'd look at this one and I say that the offense is going to be way better. Way better than it was last week because Jaden's practiced more this week, and way better than it was the first time these two teams matched up just because there's been more consistency. And we have seen that this is a legitimately really, really good to borderline great offense in the NFL. I think Washington puts up a lot of points against New York. I think the final score is going to be 30-20. Washington, I think they jumped to 7-2. I don't think they've been 7-2 in my lifetime. So I'm ready for a little bit of history.
1996, the last time they were 7-2, and they actually were 7-1 in 96 and lost the ninth game of the year. Look, to me, this is, and I think I'm going to say this a lot about our games the rest of the year. The formula to beat Washington is to use your offense to control the game. The Giants are capable of running the football. Washington has not been great or consistently good enough against the run. They've got, if they get Tracy back, and it sounds like he'll be there, that combination of Singletary, Jones is a dual threat guy. And then, you know, working Washington's corners with play action, with quick game. Malik Nabers was 10 catches, 127 yards in the opener. It was pretty obvious he was a stud in week two, and he dropped the biggest catch of the game. The Giants, I think, can shorten the game. I think they can possess the ball. I think this is, you know, I said it earlier, if Washington can get a lead and maybe get a 2-score lead and turn Daniel Jones into a have to throw quarterback, this could get, you know, ugly for New York. If New York can run the football and stay balanced and, you know, these long drives not self-destruct, I think it's a really close game, and I think that's the way it's going to go. I like Washington 23-20. So the Giants getting a cover But Washington winning the game 23-20. This should be another big game for Brian Robinson Jr. against the Giants. He had 133 yards in that first game. You know, Jaden ran for 44, and Washington rolled up, you know, 441 yards of offense in that game. And, you know, their third down conversions were, you know, like 60%, something like that. And they had the ball for like 20 more plays than the Giants had it. And if the Giants get that play count back to something, you know, even, it means they're moving the football a little bit. That's still my concern against anybody, especially teams that can run the football. But I'll go 23-20 Washington to get to 7-2. For the first time since 96. That would be amazing. And then we'll be talking a lot about the game on Monday, but we'll also be talking a lot about the deadline the next day, Election Day Tuesday, and what they would be looking for at that point.
Can I finally get a Luke McCaffrey touchdown this week? I've only been betting that every week since the Browns game. Can I get a Luke McCaffrey touchdown?
I'll give you one.
It's like plus 550 for an anytime touchdown. That's a pretty good bet. I would like to have that cash, please. I need the money.
A friend of mine said that if Penn State, Indiana, and Oregon all tie atop the Big Ten undefeated, that Oregon is out. He didn't tell me why, but I'm assuming he knows why they're out. So...
I think it comes to like common games and then strength of conference schedule. So Oregon needs some people to win more games.
Yeah. Good football weekend. Nothing great tonight. You know, Boise plays tonight. You get, you know, a Heisman contender in Genty, their running back, who's really good. And then we get a really good noon game tomorrow and a good day Sunday. I know people, we're going to get a lot of high profile games next year, and we might even get some at the end of this year. I love it when they play at 1 o'clock and you get a W and then you can sit back and enjoy some of the other games late in the afternoon and at night. The second game on Sunday should be great. Hey, I wanted to mention before we leave for the day, I want to wish a friend of ours, Pete Medhurst, who was, you know, on this station hosting a show with Chris Russell, want to wish him the best. He's battling something right now, and we really wish him the best in an upcoming surgery, which I think is taking place right now. Pete was here at the station for a while, and we're just praying for him and hoping it all turns out for the best. All right, brother, you ready for some football?
I'm ready for some football. I'm ready to make some money this weekend. So let's make a vow to do that.
Let's do that. You know, I'll have the happiness hedge situation going Sunday. Be rooting for that 23-20 win, but if they blow them out, I'll be fine with it as well. All right, Chris is in. Who's he in with?
Just Rooster Solo today, taking this one on.
All right, enjoy Chris next.
It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get 4 5G phones on us and 4 lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on a required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, 3-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.